Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance.
You're listening to the Red Pill Hardcore Asia.
You are all fools to challenge me. I'll crush you.
It's been a long time since I've been at full power. Come at me with everything you've got, understand?
We're in a war. We're gonna eat that sauce up for breakfast.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show. Your host, V, is off tonight, and we are going to play a reading of an audiobook about Dr. Fauci from Roger Landry's other show. Here we go.
$4.2 million Americans have now been canceled by their insurance companies.
Canceled your show.
And Futurama's been canceled.
Canceled.
Canceled too soon.
Is officially canceled.
Be canceled twice.
His launch pre-order bundle was canceled. Do we know it's a his?
Have been effectively canceled.
And abruptly canceled.
From Target is canceled.
Or unceremoniously canceled.
Plan was being canceled.
The cabal has been canceled.
Look at the role of the Rothschild family.
Money and power.
Monsanto and a few other chemical companies.
Culling the population through eugenics is their answer.
The World Bank's International Monetary Fund, IMF, and the World Trade Organization.
These are the most disgusting people on the face of this earth.
Or they control the information.
The powerful few people who run this planet.
They're not as powerful as you think.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now brings you Castle with the Ball with Stephen Roberts. Stephen Roberts. Stephen Roberts.
Red or blue?
Okay, welcome everyone to another Tuesday afternoon on Shake and Wake Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Castle with the Ball. I'm also on PSN Radio and SoFlo Radio. And I do want to say right off the beginning so I don't forget every time I come back on from a break, all stations are listener supported, so please hit the donate button. Going to continue on reading The Real Anthony Fauci. Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. Just the book reading today, not going to get into the Out of Babylon series. I'm going to go back about a half a paragraph to revisit from last week. In order to discourage public discussion of those embarrassing abscesses on its sacred cow, the HHS in 1984, the year Anthony Fauci became the director of the NIAID, quietly pushed through an astonishing federal regulation that reflected the agency's institutional culture of paranoia, secrecy, and imperiousness, but not America's democratic values or the U.S. Constitution. Any possible doubts whether or not well-founded about the safety of a vaccine cannot be allowed to exist in view of the need to assure that the vaccines will continue to be used to the maximum extent consistent of the nation's public health objectives. Federal Register, Volume 49, Number 107. Most Americans are shocked to learn that today the abominable regulation is law of our land. No, it's not. Not actually. To complicate these problems, the low-rent polio vaccines Gates uses in Africa and Asia are dramatically different from those used in Western countries. The Bill and Melinda Gates committed more than $1 billion pushing to oral polio vaccine that contains a live polio virus across the global south. This live virus can replicate inside a child's gut and spread in regions with substandard sanitation and plumbing. That means people can contract the virus from the vaccine. Gates' program created windfall profits for pharmaceutical behemoths that could not market such dangerous products in Western countries. Experts argue that Gates' attempts to exterminate polio would be counterproductive, extirpating the final dwindling dead and infectious requires carpet bombing entire regions with massive vaccination batteries, raising the paradoxical risk of vaccine-strain polio epidemics. I can't see myself how we can satisfactorily eliminate the vaccine-derived strains, said Professor Donald Henderson, a distinguished scholar at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center for Biosecurity. I just don't think it can be done. Henderson is the renowned WHO epidemiologist who led the successful campaign against smallpox during the 1960s. Ignoring such advice, Gates declared war on polio in India and implemented a shock and awe strategy to exterminate those last few cases. Gates took control of India's vaccine oversight panel, the National Advisory Board, by stacking it with loyalists and friendly PIs. Under his control, the NAB mandated an astonishing barrage of 50 polio vaccines, up to 5 for each child, in several key Indian provinces before they reached the age of 5. As Henderson predicted, vaccine-derived polio virus, a mutation of the virus contained in the oral vaccine, came back to bite Gates, and the unfortunate populations of the nations that submitted to his prescriptions. Indian doctors blamed the Gates campaign for a devastating vaccine strain epidemic of acute fluid myelitis, a disease formerly classified as polio, that paralyzed 491,000 children in these provinces between 2000 and 2017, in direct proportion to the number of polio vaccines that Dr. Gates's minions administered in each area. Non-polio acute flaccid paralysis, NPAFP, is clinically indistinguishable from polio, but twice as deadly. According to Keith Van Herren, child neurologist at the Stanford School of Medicine. Van Herren explains that acute flaccid myelitis, AFM, is a polite term for polio. It actually looks just like polio, but that term really freaks out the public health people. Gee, I wonder why. In 2012, the British Medical Journal, Riley noted that polio eradication in India has been achieved by renaming the disease. That year, the disillusioned Indian government dialed back Gates's vaccine regimen and evicted Gates's cronies and PIs from the NAB. Polio paralysis rates dropped precipitously. After squandering half of its total budget on the polio epidemic at Gates's direction, the WHO reluctantly admitted that the global polio explosion is predominantly vaccine strained, meaning it is happening because of Gates's vaccine program. The most frightening epidemics in Congo, the Philippines, and Afghanistan are all linked to the vaccines he promoted. Polio had disappeared altogether from each of those nations until Gates's reintroduced the dreaded disease with his vaccine. In Syria, the Gates-backed Gavi committed $25 million for polio immunization in 2016. The following year, the WHO reported that 58 Syrian children had been paralyzed by the vaccine derived from form of the virus. Other vaccine strain polio outbreaks occurred in China, Egypt, Haiti, and Malaysia. A study of Oxford's Clinical Infectious Disease periodical found that Gates's oral polio vaccine is not only giving kids polio, but also seems to be ineffective in stopping polio transmission. By 2018, the WHO conceded 70% of global polio cases came from Gates's vaccines. As the British Medical Journal reported in 2012, most recent mass polio vaccination programs in India, fueled by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, resulted in increased cases of polio. In an interview with NPR, Professor of Microbiology Raul Andino said, "It's actually an interesting conundrum. The very tool you're using for polio eradication is causing the problem." Dr. Henderson argued that Gates's futile campaign would strip money from other areas of need, forcing nations to prioritize polio immunization at the expense of other public health investments. Arthur Kaplan, an eminent bioethicist and a polio vaccine fanatic, who himself suffered from polio as a child, also criticized Gates's obsession with polio eradication, pointing out that government budgets and resources in poor nations are diverted from other far more pressing local problems to try and capture the last marginal cases. Donald Henderson observes the only Western nations and billionaires like Gates consider eliminating the disease as a priority. Polio kills far fewer people in developing regions than scourges such as malaria, TB, malnutrition, and the greatest killer, dysentery, from deficient water supplies. When Gates first floated his dream of eradicating polio, developing nations feared a diversion of sources towards an area where the money was least warranted. When you're doing polio, you're not doing other things, Henderson says. At least through 2011, in several countries, Nigeria, India, and Pakistan, they were giving polio vaccines. In 2012, there were only 223 reported cases of polio worldwide. By any measure, polio is not the world's greatest killers. Road accidents, for example, kill about 1.25 million people each year. Measles kills 150,000 children each year. Number of villagers say, what is polio? We've never seen it. Why are we worried about it? Rather than provoking reevaluation, Henderson's concern seems to infuriate Gates. I've got to get my DA Henderson response down better. Gates mumbled to one of his aides in 2011 after the New York Times editorial board interviewed him doing his transglobal trek soliciting rich and poor governments to ratchet up their commitment to his polio enterprise. It's beyond me how somebody hasn't killed the great and wonderful Dr. Bill Gates in the last 10 to 15 years. Just amazes me. I don't know if I want to go into it or not, but I'm sure he has killed or maimed some rich family's child or something, and it just surprises me they haven't taken him out. That response suggests that he is aware of the criticism by the man's most knowledgeable but eradicating diseases. Instead of integrating Henderson's critique into his strategy or executing a mid-course correction, Gates treated Henderson's caveats as a marketing challenge and lumbered onward. His imperviousness policies has accepted collateral damage in its self-serving schemes for humanity. Gates' strategic investments have made him immune to criticism by the media and the scientific community. And so despite these atrocities, the Gates Foundation steers WHO like a rogue destroyer floundering forward full speed ahead through the mayhem and the carnage of dead and the paralyzed children whose ruined lives bob in their wake. In 2020, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation boasted that the WHO is now providing unprecedented levels of technical assistance for polio vaccination campaigns in Nigeria, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. HPV vaccine. In 2009 and 2012, the Gates Foundation funded tests of experimental HPV vaccines developed by Gates' partner, GlaxoSmithKline and Merck, on 23,000 girls, 11 to 14 years old, in remote provinces of India. These experiences were part of the Gates effort to bolster these companies' sketchy claims that HPV vaccines protect women against cervical cancer that might develop in old age. Gates and his foundation have large investments in both countries. Since deaths of cervical cancer occur on an average age of 58 in the United States, and affect only 1 in 40,000 women, and since virtually all these deaths are preventable with early detection by pap smears, any vaccine given to young girls to prevent the low risk of preventable death half a century from now ought to be 100% safe, and this vaccine isn't even close. Both Merck and Glaxo disclosed in their shareholders' reports that profitable performances by their flagship HPV vaccines were top indicators of shareholder value. Gardasil has been a top seller for Merck, earning total global sales of $1.2 billion in 2011, a windfall for the company floundering to recover from a $7 billion court settlement related to criminal charges that the company had knowingly killed between 100,000 to 500,000 Americans by defrauding customers of the safety of its blockbuster pill pain, Vioxx. Merck's executives nicknamed the HPV vaccine Help Pay for Vioxx and fast-tracked it to a market after shoddy safety tests under pressure from Wall Street analysts itching to downgrade Merck's buy recommendations. At least 1,200 of the girls in Gates' study, 1 in 20, suffered severe side effects, including autoimmune and fertility disorders. 7 died, about 10 times the U.S. death. Rates for cervical cancer, which almost kills the young, which almost never kills the young. India's federal minister of health suspended the trials and appointed an expert parliamentary committee to investigate the scandal. Indian government investigators found that Gates's funded research at PATH committed pervasive ethical violations, pursuing vulnerable village girls into the trial. Pressuring vulnerable village girls into the trial. Bullying illiterate parents and foregoing consent forms. Gates provided health insurance for his PATH staff, but not to any participants in the trials, and refused medical care to the hundreds of injured girls. The PATH researchers targeted girls at Ashram Pathshalas boarding schools for tribal children to dodge the need to seek parental consent for the shots. They gave the girls HPV immunization cards that were printed in English, which the girls couldn't read. They did not tell the girls that they were part of a clinical trial and instead hoodwinked them with a lie that they were wellness shots that would guarantee lifelong protection against cancer. That was not true. PATH conducted the trials in impoverished rural areas that lacked mechanisms for tracking the adverse effects and had no system for recording major adverse reactions to the vaccines, something legally mandated for large-scale clinical trials. In 2010, the Indian Council for Medical Ethics found that the Gates Group had violated India's ethical protocols. In August 2013, a special parliamentary committee excoriated PATH, stating that the NGO's sole aim has been to promote the commercial interest of HPV vaccine manufacturers, who would have reaped windfall profits had PATH been successful in getting the HPV vaccine included in the universal immunization program of the country. According to Dr. Colin Gonsalves, senior counsel of the Supreme Court of India, the Indian Parliament formed a committee, and it was to be a rather surprising move, because you generally don't often have such a high-level inquiry into matters affecting poor people. And that was such an extraordinary report. I don't think the Indian Parliament has ever come out with such a scathing report. And the government officials come out and said, "We shouldn't have authorized this. We're sorry. And we're not going to allow them again." And now they are back doing the same old tricks. In 2013, two separate groups of health activists and human rights advocates filed public interest litigation petitions calling on Indian Supreme Court to investigate the HPV trials and determine whether PATH and other stakeholders responsible for the trial should be held liable for financial damages in relation to the families of seven deceased girls. One of the lead petitioners, Amir Jassani, a physician who directs the Center for Studies in Ethics and Rights in Mumbai, told Professor McGoy that he regrets that he did not add the Gates Foundation as a defendant. The ethical guidelines of the Indian Council for Medical Research talks about totality of responsibility. It defends the totality of responsibility in terms of everybody. That means sponsor involved, Jassani said. Under that principle, everyone should be held responsible. There is also no evidence that the report, that the Gates Foundation took any steps to discipline PATH for the research it carried out in India. I think to some extent the Gates Foundation thinks PATH has done nothing wrong. And that is a concern. No one needs to get a spotlight on the Gates Foundation. The case is now before the country's Supreme Court. CDC cited Merck's and Gates's cheery assessments of the grotesque Indian experiments to help justify their expanded recommendation for the Gardasil vaccine. Prior to COVID-19, Gardasil was the most dangerous vaccine ever licensed, accounting for some 22% of cumulative injuries. From all adverse events reported to the U.S. Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS, V-A-E-R-S. During clinical trials, Merck was unable to show that Gardasil was effective against cervical cancer. Instead, the studies showed that the vaccine actually increases cervical cancer by 46.3% in women exposed to HPV prior to vaccination. Perhaps one-third of all women. According to Merck's clinical trial reports, the vaccine was associated with autoimmune diseases in one out of every 39 women. Since introduction of that vaccine in 2006, thousands of girls have reported debilitating autoimmune diseases, and cancer rates have skyrocketed in young women. HPV vaccines and fertility. Gates' strong patronage of HPV vaccines, Gardasil and Cervarix, deepened suspicions that he was weaponizing vaccination against human fertility. Merck's clinical trials showed strong signals for reproductive harm from Gardasil. People in the study suffered reproductive problems, including premature ovarian failure at 10 times background rates. Female fertility has dropped precipitously beginning in 2006 in the United States. Coterminius, I don't know what that word is. Never seen it. Must be another snob word. Coterminius with Gardasil uptake. Historical drops in fecundity. Another snob word. Have occurred in every nation with high Gardasil uptake. Okay, I'm going to take a break here. I can find my pen, mark my spot. Some of these words. I don't think a lot of snobs even know these words, Mark. They probably got to look them up too. I don't know. I guess, let me see. Find my mouse. Let me see. I think a couple of short songs. I guess be back in about 6 minutes, everyone. So.
Don't let worries cloud your mind with fear. Pull your head up high in the early by and by. All your troubles through will disappear.
You can move that mountain. You can move that mountain. Don't wait till tomorrow. Start today. We should.
right, welcome back. After the break there. A couple of pretty good songs. I like them. Hepatitis B, a conspiracy by Gavi and the WHO and UNICEF to force India to mandate hepatitis B vaccines, is yet another illustration of how, under Bill Gates' hegemony, vaccine industry profits trump public health. The WHO initially recommended hepatitis B vaccinations only in countries with high incidence of hepatocellular carcinoma, HCC, the species of liver cancer that the vaccine promises to abolish. I just had a crazy thought, totally off topic, but there for, I don't know how long it was, at least a year, maybe a year and a half, the Democrats and the mainstream media wanted to know what Trump's tax returns were, where he made his money. But I wonder if they have any sort of an inkling on asking Joe Biden about his tax returns, where his money come from. I wonder if they would find Ukrainian interests in there. Just a little bit of a thought. I don't know. Since HCC is rare in India, the country did not qualify under WHO's initial criteria, which recommended the vaccine only in nations with significant HCC. WHO's policy meant the vaccine manufacturers would lose a market of 1.3 billion people. Notwithstanding such concerns about the high costs and meager benefits of the vaccine, Gates, through his surrogates at Gavi and PATH and WHO, successfully arm-twisted the government, the Indian government, in 2007 and 8 into introducing hepatitis B vaccines. Gavi pushed WHO to change the official policy to a universal recommendation, meaning that even countries with low disease burdens would be required to vaccinate. Gavi hoped this would reopen the Indian markets, who obligingly changed its recommendation to include universal immunization with hepatitis B vaccine for all countries, even those who were HCC, where HCC was not a problem. The Indian government obediently adopted WHO's recommendation. Yes, it would, Mark. Ukraine and Big Pharma. And bioweapons. WHO obligingly changed its recommendation to include universal immunizations with hepatitis B vaccine for all countries, even those where HCC was not a problem. Indian government obediently adopted WHO's recommendations. Indian academics and public health officials condemned the government's hepatitis B mandates, citing India's extremely low burden from HCC. The Indian Cancer Registry shows the incidence of hepatocellular carcinoma due to hepatitis B infection is only 5,000 cases a year. Independent scientists and Indian physicians argue against immunization. 25 million babies each year to theoretically prevent 5,000 cases of HCC. Anti-cancer vaccines are poor performers, and there is not even meager proof that a vaccine can prevent any cancers. Dr. Jacob M. Pouliot, MD, chair of the Department of Pediatrics, St. Stephen Hospital, Delphi, told me that even if the vaccine were 100% effective, the need to administer 15,000 vaccines to infants to prevent a single death from HCC might occur decades later. Intuitively, seems an economic way to spend scarce health resources. In a July 17, 1999 commentary published in the BMJ, I forgot what that is, British Medical Journal, Dr. Pouliot observed that the cheapest Indian hepatitis B vaccine cost 360 rupees, about $5, for three doses. Dr. Pouliot points out that that a third of India's population earn less than 57 rupees per capita per month. The main cause of death in India is diarrhea, respiratory infections, and malnutrition. Pouliot says, should immunizations against hepatitis B take priority over the provision of clean drinking water? A study of Gates's forced introduction of hepatitis B vaccines in India showed that the vaccine did not reduce hepatitis B, the frequency of chronic carriers, HBsAg positivity, was similar in the unvaccinated as in the vaccinated. The study further suggested that maternal immunization was protecting newborn babies from infection at the time when they are most vulnerable to develop chronic carrier status and HCC, and that the vaccine program reduces its natural immunity. Paradoxically, therefore, there is a substantial likelihood that Gates' vaccine is increasing the incidence of HCC in the country. These findings demonstrated the absurd futility of hepatitis B vaccination in India. No matter, says Pouliot, Gates' opinion was the only thing that counted. WHO stood firm, taking the position that all countries must include hepatitis B vaccine in their immunization program, even if the vaccine was unsuccessful. Haemophilus influenza B, HIB. WHO followed its hepatitis B debacle with a much weaker recommendation for vaccination against Haemophilus influenza type B, HIB, who the WHO recommended HIB vaccines only in nations suffering a grave disease burden. In an editorial at the bulletin of the WHO, Indian doctors questioned the need for HIB vaccine in Asia, where the incidence of invasive HIB disease was extremely low. In 2002, Dr. Thomas Shirane, who is now the WHO coordinator of EPI, wrote that based on the available data, HIB vaccine should not be recommended for routine use in India. To overcome such meddling from India's prying medical community in 2005, Gates funded through the Gavi Institute a four-year, 37 million study of max vaccinations with HIV jabs in Bangladesh, intended to showcase a vaccine's benefits. Gavi's Bangladesh study backfired, showing no advantage from HIV vaccination. In response, a formidable coterie of superstar international health experts, all of them coincidentally from Gates-funded organizations, WHO, Gavi, UNICEF, and USAID, Johns Hopkins, Bloomberg School of Public Health, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and CDC, issued a deceitful proclamation that fraudulently claimed that the Bangladesh study proved a HIV jab protects children from significant burden of life-threatening pneumonia and meningitis. Prominent Indian doctors responded with outrage commentaries in the British Medical Journal and the Indian Journal of Medical Research, describing the Gates-funded study as a devious artifice. Based on Gates's orchestrated guile, WHO in 2006 took the official position that the HIV vaccine should be included in all routine immunization programs. Once again, the Indian government caved into Gates and mandated HIV vaccines in India, where HIV invasive disease was nearly non-existent. Yeah, I wonder how much Dr. Gates greased their pockets or filled their pockets. In self-congratulatory articles, Gavi boasted triumphantly that its role in rescuing the HIV vaccine project in India after the Bangladesh study proved the vaccine was worthless, waste of money. Gavi, 2007, Levine. Gavi's article notes that since there was little burden from HIV disease in India, it had been a great challenge to gin up support for WHO's recommendation. Gavi bragged in technocratic argo that it twisted the WHO's arm to revise WHO's HIV vaccine policy from a weak permissive statement to a firm recommendation calling the universal vaccine introduction to all countries. WHO's volt face dragoned reticent Indian health officials to recommend the useless vaccine. Dr. Pouliel explains that incident highlights the influence Gavi and other vaccine manufacturers funded organizations like the HIV Initiative have on the WHO, and it impacts vaccine uptake internationally. Pouliel protests that the Gates Foundation has privatized and monetized international public health policy, transforming WHO recommendations into effective mandates and compelling poor countries to pay annual tribute to foreign pharma overlords. Pouliel told me that India and other Asian nations are now effectively compelled to administer the vaccine to increase HIV uptake targets, irrespective of an individual country's disease burden. Notwithstanding of natural immunity attained within the country against the disease, and not talking about account and not taking into account the rights of sovereign states to decide how they use their limited resources. He adds that the mandate and wisdom of issuing such a directive for a disease that has little potential of becoming a pandemic needs to be questioned. Did you get booted again, Mark? Dr. Pupuliel's commentary in the British Medical Journal denounced Gates and Gavi for pushing HIV vaccine in developing countries and for falsifying characterizations of the research data in their press release. The directive has come after a number of failed attempts to convince the scientific community of the need for this vaccine in Asia. Pouliel described the HIV saga as a case study in the visible and invisible pressures brought to bear on governments to deploy expensive new vaccines. Pentavalent vaccine. Despite Gates' victory in winning recommendations for HIV and hepatitis B in Asia, actual uptake rates disappointed the pharma Mikados. Defying the WHO and Indian Health Ministry recommendations, local physicians stonewalled the jab. Most Indians had never heard of either illness, but Pouliel told me Indian doctors were not impressed by the need for either HIV or hepatitis B jabs and seldom recommended them to patients. Physician resistance stymied Indian health officials from meeting WHO's uptake metrics for the newly recommended shots. To overcome this problem, pharma introduced a diabolically cunning strategy to euthanize three birds. With one stone. The companies withdrew their flagging HIV and hepatitis B vaccines and reinstated a new concoction that combined these immunizations with the DTP, which, despite its popularity, had become another sandbag in Big Pharma's profit ambitions. By 2008, Pfizer's diphtheria patent was long expired, and there were 63 manufacturers making the vaccine in 42 countries with large surpluses and very low margins. The Gates cabal solved these profiteering problems by brewing up a new five diseases vaccine by mixing the DTP, HIV, and hepatitis B formulas into a single syringe. That was awful nice, Sam. The new combination became the new medicine, the new vaccine. The Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, Gavi, and the WHO christened the novel untested and unlicensed concoction the Pentavalent vaccine. It recommended its use in developing countries to replace the DTP vaccine. Compliant Indian health ministries then phased out the DTP, which had been popular with doctors. If any physician or individual wanted DTP, their only choice was to be the Pentavalent vaccine. On its website, Gavi admitted its underlying reason for this caper was to increase the uptake of the hepatitis B and HIV vaccines, in which countries, by piggybacking on the well-accepted DTP vaccine, it was an ingenious money-making connivance. Competition had driven down the cost of DTP to fifteen and a half rupees, about 14 cents U.S. The hepatitis B vaccine retailed for 45 rupees and the HIV for 25. Therefore, the combination cost of all three vaccines as purchased separately was 185. However, the new pentavalent vaccine made by Gates' friend Cyrus Poonawalla, owner of the Serum Institute of India, costs 550 rupees, a 1,440% increase in profits for every vaccine sold. The Food and Drug Administration has not licensed the combination vaccine for either safety or efficacy, and developed countries do not use it. A Cochrane meta-analysis showed that the combination is less effective than the vaccines given separately. Furthermore, the pentavalent vaccine is life-threatening to infants. Before its Indian debut, Bhutan, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and Vietnam previewed the pentavalent jab. In each of these countries, unexplained deaths followed immunizations. Bhutan suspended the immunization program in October 2009 after 5 cases of encephalitis occurred following the vaccine. WHO persuaded health officials to resume the program, insisting the viral meningoencephalitis caused the deaths. Bhutan obeyed, and 4 infants died. Bhutan no longer uses the pentavalent vaccine. The director of public health, Dr. Ugyen Dofu, observes that there have been no more cases of meningoencephalitis among infants after the vaccine was withdrawn. Sri Lanka unleashed the pentavalent vaccine in January 2009 and then suspended the program 4 months later after 5 babies died. Under pressure from the WHO, Sri Lanka reintroduced the vaccine in 2010. Between 2010 and 2012, there were 14 additional deaths following the vaccine, making the total number of deaths in Sri Lanka 19. Vietnam introduced the pentavalent jab in June 2010 and suspended the jab in May 2013 after 27 infants died. The experience in Pakistan was similar, including at least 3 reported deaths. India introduced pentavalent vaccine in December 2011. Up to the first quarter of 2013, health officials reported 83 serious adverse events following immunization. 21 babies have died in India following immunizations with the pentavalent vaccine. Okay, we're at another break here.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.